For March the 5th, 2018, we talk about Satisfactory, the 20th anniversary of EverQuest, and we ask you what game-related April Fool's joke you would run. Welcome to Level 280. My name's Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith. And clearly, Jala / Ben are the glue that holds this group together.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a collision there. You're listening to The Level, the podcast for people who love video games. Not the podcast for people who love video games. No. It all stays in.
There can only be one.
I keep seeing these, I go to the grocery store and it'll be like, oh, Fritos is the official snack of summer or whatever. So if they can do that, we can be the official podcast of people who love video games.
Okay, fuck it. Let's just claim it and see if anybody comes at us. Yeah.
Oh God, I've already gotten the suit.
Damn it.
Come at me, bro.
No, so Jala pays attention to the usual order, right? And Ben always goes last. And I always go first. It's always so without the two of them, there is no clear sense of who goes last is the thing. Mm-hmm. So, oh well, but it all stays in. Welcome. Welcome back, Dennis. How's things been?
Thank you. They've been good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to think of any exciting anecdotes. Just lots of family fun. Did a lot of concerts recently.
Mm.
Went and saw Hozier play at the Grand Ole Opry. That was awesome.
Oh, cool.
Who is Hozier?
Hozier. Yeah, I think I'm saying it right anyway. He's like a folksy kind of artist. You might know him. His like big radio one is Take Me to Church.
Okay.
Which is way less devout than you would imagine from the title. But he was amazing. The best thing was that he sounded exactly as good live as he did on the album.
Oh, nice.
And in fact, there are several, we listen to him on Spotify all the time. There are several live cuts where you don't realize it's a live cut until you get to the end. And you're like, thank you so much. This is wonderful coming out. You're like, oh my God.
It's a real polished live presentation.
Go ahead.
He actually just says that on his studio recordings to mess with people.
I mean, like Kiss did that. Like they made a quote unquote live album that was just them recording in the studio, and they just put like incredibly loud like crowd noises like cheering over it just over That's the entire fantastic. Thing.
That's fantastic. I like that. So that was good. I also went and saw Iron and Wine play at the Taft Theater with the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra.
Oh wow.
And he did his full Our Endless Numbers Days album. It was one of three places in the country he did it. He did it with the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, then he's going to do it with LA and New York.
Yeah.
So how Cincinnati got on that list, I don't know, but it was awesome.
No idea.
So what is Iron and Wine? Because that sounds like that should be like, I don't know, a Conan the Barbarian movie or something.
It is. If you take the opposite of Conan the Barbarian, you've got Iron and Wine. Yeah. Another very folksy, chill singer that is even more folksy and chill than Hozier. So,
yeah, the Taft is a good venue.
It's pretty good. You can sit while you listen. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, were they in the like in the basement, the ballroom, or were they up in the, like, if they had the symphony, they would be.
Yeah, they were up on the main stage doing it big, but yeah, so it's been a musical couple of days here.
That's cool. Yeah, how about you, David? How are things up in New York?
Pretty good. Enjoying finally getting back to having decent weather. Sunlight during the day.
Yeah,
so we started up our martial arts group in the in the park again, which was fun because that means I get to actually do some sparring.
Hmm.
So that was kind of fun, kind of knock some of the rust off, that sort of thing.
Literally, in some cases.
Oh, yes, yes. Very literally.
I like that. So, you better watch out, buddy. I'm going to knock the rust off of you.
Yeah, that's I'm actually workshopping that as my new, you know, catchphrase. we're still in focus group testing.
It's,
but
it's
we'll
real.
See.
It's real specific, not really versatile, I think.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know what it is I only fight rust monsters.
Okay. Yeah. No,
that makes sense. It's very specific. Where do you find a lot of those in New York?
No, they're all over the place.
You know,
in the sewers.
You have to know where to look. You know, you have to go to the right place, and then overturn discarded steel drums and stuff, and they just kind of skitter out, hiding from the light. So propeller tails, propelling them through this sewer water.
Yeah, why do you think the subways are such shit?
So this is completely random, but did you see the article? It might have been a while back now, but it was talking about apparently the Baltimore subway system is so old and out of date, they actually have a blacksmith on staff to repair some of the parts.
Oh, God. Really?
Wow.
Yeah, it's like this is how you know America has an infrastructure problem.
Oh, man. Yeah. As for me, nothing much going on. I'm going to have contractors here later this week putting in wired internet at my house, but that is not.
Ooh, that sounds necessary.
Well, I mean, so I've got Wi-Fi and stuff, but, in order to I want to put a network attached storage in my utility closet. I want to be able to stream stuff to my Steam Link again, stuff like that. I realize that's not so much an interesting story as it is a boring, I have a house and I want to do things to it story. So,
oh, don't even lie. For tech nerds, wired internet is about as sexy as you can get.
It's pretty good. I'm looking forward to it.
I feel that says less about wired internet than it does about tech nerds.
I think so. Yeah, so looking forward to that. I got the new computer build, and it's great. I got to break it in with the game I'm going to be talking about this time, this episode. Yeah, it's fine. It's all good. How do you guys feel about getting started? We got the usual kind of show for you. You know, what with a brief, a multiplayer, and a grind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See, I like how when Jala's not here to call you out, you have to stick with the correct order.
Well, I mean, so I was about to get to the point where I, kind of tease. In fact, Jala wrote to me and said, "Hey, this time I think that you should begin with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games around us." Jala didn't actually say that. I didn't mean to put words in her mouth. let's see. Dennis, what's going on with this new Battle Royale game?
Yeah, can I talk to you guys about my cycle real quick?
This could go a bunch of different ways. So I'm going to say yes.
I appreciate you leaning in like that. No, so there's a new game coming out from Jaeger, which is the developer that made... more infamously, Spec Ops: The Line. Less infamously, Dreadnought. Although Dreadnought was a great game, they are now coming out with a third game in an entirely new genre and putting a very interesting twist on it. So the game is called, I can't understand, it's got to be a working title name, but it's called The Cycle.
Okay.
And it's a battle royale game, which, take a shot. Of course, everyone's getting in on that. But they're pitching it as a battle royale game for people who don't like battle royale games.
Okay.
A battle royale game for me.
Yeah. So it's basically a big open world. Questing is the focus of it, though, versus fighting. So you drop in with however many other people, and I forget the exact number that they're pitching, but, a large group of people. And you are assigned a number of contracts. The contracts are random. They require you to do everything from gather a certain amount of materials to killing a certain type of enemy. And I don't mean other players. The world is populated with lots and lots of non-player enemies. So it's a lot of PvE. And there, you know, there's a ton of other objectives that you might be given. And in a round of 15 minutes, which is the cycle, and which is the cycle, you try to complete as many of these contracts as you can and then get to the escape pod to get off the planet before it becomes too inhospitable. Huh. As time goes on, the planet gets more and more dangerous. The enemies get more and more dangerous. But you can also use some of those materials that you've collected to craft better equipment so that you can weather those storms better. Huh. Okay, all makes sense. When you encounter another player, though, that's where things get interesting. Because you could kill them. And you can take them out, and they will just die and respawn. And you get a small reward from it, but it's not a huge reward. Or you can propose teaming up with them.
Okay.
And form an alliance.
Oh, and please then you tell me and you can betray. Player, can you betray?
You can betray. Betray, confirm. So you can team up with them. That gives you double the manpower against all these contracts that you're trying to accomplish. And at any point, should you decide, you can choose to betray that person and the alliance and then try to gun them down for a couple extra credits. Hmm. With all the dangers that implies and knowing that they might do it to you. So it's a very colorful world. Like, it's so interesting to see, you know, after Spec Ops The Line, which was very, you know, Call of Duty, and then, you know, Dreadnought, which was space simi, like a light Elite Dangerous. This looks almost like Fortnite meets a little bit of Borderlands, a little bit of cartooniness. Mm-hmm. Very battle royale in summation, unfortunately. But the idea is so, so interesting. And I'm excited. This is nothing more than a thing is happening. It's an alpha right now. It goes into beta sometime in May. Yeah. But I love this idea of giving people more verbs with other people in a battle royale game than just shoot.
Yeah. So I'm curious, you know, part of the huge thing about Battle Royale is that kind of winnowing down of the play field, not so much physically, although I know that's a part of it, but of the actual competitors, right? You know, eventually it is, you know, if not the two best people in the game facing off against each other, it is at least the two people who have managed to survive the longest.
Yes.
And that is, and that is where a good deal of the tension comes from, right? Is there a similar winnowing down that you can tell, or is it literally just, okay, we're going to go out and try and score as many of these contract points so we can earn passage off?
Yeah, that is hard to say.
Yeah.
Just from the article that I'm using for this, it is clear that things get more and more dangerous on the planet, and that at the end there is a single exit point.
Mm-hmm.
So that in itself will kind of provide a winnowing or a focusing point for everyone to head towards.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, it seems like you will be able to kind of run amok on the map where you like,
yeah,
to try to finish contracts, which has, because the primary way you score points and the way you win is by completing the most contracts, there's a risk and reward. Do I go take this lucrative contract on the other side of the map knowing I'll have to book it to get back, mm-hmm, to the escape pod and everyone will be camping, you know, camping waiting for a couple extra kills.
Right.
Or do I kind of just take something that's closer and smaller and know that I can get to the escape pod first?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the way I understand it right now. I could have that wrong.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder how without the focus being conflict, how they can maintain the drama, which even though I've been bad at any of these that I've tried, that has been kind of, I guess I was not bad at Tetris 99 regardless. the drama was the thing that was like, oh yeah, like that is the genius part of this formula.
So they give a couple examples of contracts and items in the world that could give us a hint on how they might enforce that. The first one that they give an example of is you can pick up this light shard, which just gives you continuous points as long as you're holding it. And was a zeal shard, excuse, mm-hmm, me. And the longer they hold it, the more points you get, but it puts you on the radar for every other player in the map. And certain players might get a contract to go get a zeal shard.
Yeah.
So there's that. That's pretty elegant.
That's like it's like that playground game with a name that I literally cannot say out loud in 2019.
Maybe it's a good thing I don't know which one you're talking
about. I'll bleep it out. One second here. Smear the.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I never understood like how that was a game that was even tacitly allowed. Because I mean, it's basically, you know, institutionalized Fight Club.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But... more and more of our childhoods is becoming. I have that reaction too.
Yeah. I'm like, oh wow. Okay. Yeah. So we just did that.
Yeah. I mean, I was homeschooled, so I was above all of that Philistine.
I played that lots with my brother.
I've got to say that's a sport. I obviously, like you said, it would need a rebranding, but I would love that to become the new hipster, like, let's be adults and play, you know, have like a dodgeball league or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's good.
Anyway.
I mean, I pick my son up at daycare and it's a room full of 4-year-olds and they basically have a permanent game of that going unofficially. Just everyone's getting knocked down by everyone else constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one. the other one is there will be lightning storms where like a certain type of other shard shows up and everyone can see where those happen and they're very lucrative. So it kind of pulls people towards. But, that, you know, it's interesting. If you want to just go find a hidey hole, wait for the escape pod, and leave, that's great. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Good on you. But you're not going to win. And that's a dimension of these kind of Battle Royale games, which has always been true. In that, you know, you can hide, but you won't be kitted outright for the final fight. It's just enforced in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
So interesting stuff. And I'm excited to see how it develops.
Yeah.
A thing is happening.
It certainly is. And my hope is that this works out well for Jaeger. I like that studio.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah.
Like that studio, hate that booze.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Jaeger reminds me. Nah.
Also, though, I do have to say, now that we're done with legitimate like commentary, I do have to give my snarky thing. I feel like a alternate... read on this could be Jaeger announces they have invented PvP servers.
I've got one that is kind of a thing is happening and also kind of a reminder that in reality, wholesome things rule. Okay. That is a thing I firmly believe.
I'm giving you the side eye, but go on.
Wholesome things rule. If something is, I am fine dying on that hill. However, I forget a few years ago. I forget if we ever did a story about this. I feel like it's been brought up on the show. Do you guys know who Skyrim Grandma is?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Not I. Go ahead.
Okay. So Skyrim Grandma, she is an 82-year-old woman, currently 82 years old. 82 years young, rather. That is the broadcast standard. And a few years back, she was encouraged, I believe, by a family member, or she said, hey, fuck it, I'm going to do it myself. And she started doing Let's Plays of Skyrim because she loved the Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. She put them up on YouTube, and they're really nice. Like, she's good at the game and she like knows the stuff, but she talks like a grandma does.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, she's got like 500,000 YouTube subscribers. Again, wholesome things rule. Bethesda, in kind of a PR move, I suppose, Bethesda has said, you know what, we appreciate what you're doing so much. We're so excited about this. We're going to make you a character in Elder Scrolls 6. So they brought her into the studio. Like, she got to meet Todd Howard. There was a very awkward video of Todd Howard interacting with this awesome older lady. And they are scanning her. They have scanned her. And she's going to be included as a character in this upcoming video game, which I imagine just makes her really happy. She even says, like, wow, I can't believe it. There's, you know, in the aforementioned awkward video, she's like, yeah, this this rules. And I agree, Shirley, which is her name. That does rule. And you rule. This is great.
Here's the thing. It would almost be more awkward if she wasn't awkward.
if she was the one who was like, she, together.
She's like, too right, man. Word. I'm excited to be in this video game.
If she was just, like, if she was just talking like an actual streamer or an actual player. What's up, dipshits? What up, smash that bell.
Granny streams.ttv. What's up?
Fuck.
So good. I'm glad, like you said, wholesome things rule. She should not know how to interact with people in a rad gaming studio. Because yeah. She's a wonderful granny.
Yeah. Like, she has an excuse for being kind of like, oh, a camera's pointed at me. That's different. Todd Howard is the one, I think, who is bringing most of the awkward heat.
Oh, well, then shame on him.
Yeah.
There's got to be somewhere a video of her yelling Fusro Da, and my life will not be complete until I see it.
You can comb through. She's got that playthrough up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 500,000 subscribers. and that is all. That is my story. A cool thing happened to somebody who seems to be pretty badass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here, David, you just put yours in, so I don't know how to hint it. So let me take a look here. What has turned 20 years old?
Yeah. So, EverQuest, and with it, the 3D MMO genre.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
you know, I mean, you look at it and you say, oh yeah, that game's 20 years old as fuck. I look at myself and I say, I wasn't 11 when this came out, or I wasn't 12 when this came out. Screw you.
Yeah. It's, you know, EverQuest is, I was never quite into it, you know, nearly as much as, you were, a lot of it because, like, I actually got into it fairly late in its life.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of. I say sort of because it's had this weird thing where, you know, I started playing it, two or three years before World of Warcraft came out.
Yeah.
Which I would kind of consider, you know, I'm doing air quotes, the end of its life, except for the fact that, like, it's still running.
Yeah, it's still running. And I think it's even, like, it's even outlasted EverQuest 2. I don't believe EQ2 is still running.
Yeah, yeah. I would not be surprised. So one of the things that caught my eye is apparently there have been 25 expansions released.
Mm-hmm.
And the so for people who haven't played, you know, EverQuest has much more explicit zones than most modern MMOs do.
Hmm.
You know, you actually have to load in. You know, that sort of thing. And apparently there are 1,600 playable areas.
Yeah, I believe it.
So, go on.
25 expansions, and they still haven't been able to add armor that covers more than 5% of a woman's body.
Eventually. So, it is regrettable that they put Furry on a Vi on every one of their covers, because she is not actually indicative. There is plenty of armor that does cover up the ladies.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just in their art. It's just in the thing that everything sees, that they are aggressive and gross.
It's just in the way they represent themselves to the world. It's not how it actually is.
unless you create a you know, female wood elf, in which case you spawn without pants.
Yeah, you're basically in lingerie. I misspoke. EverQuest 2 got an expansion, Chaos Descending, as recently as November 2018. So,
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I always have really kind of bittersweet feelings when I look back on EverQuest, just because it's interesting to see a game that kind of was designed first and foremost to, you know, trying interesting things, as opposed to being, you know, just super homogenized and focus grouped.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was designed specifically when they thought it was going to be like a pay per minute model. So like a lot of the early stuff was a little bit more of a predatory version of like pay to win or whatever, which is okay. We just need things to last for a long time. And then they got rid of that model and made it before launch, they made it into a flat rate, like monthly fee kind of thing.
Right.
You know, and so, but a lot of those conventions still stuck around. So,
I just love, for example, the fact that, you know, if you want to learn new languages, you have to do so by immersion. Literally, you know, the more you hear other players chat in a language your character doesn't understand and just gets garbled text,
yeah,
the more you learn it.
Yeah, and like that's one of those things that I love in principle, right? Because, you know, you end up with something like that is a significant downside to playing an Ixar, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, the lizard race, they don't speak common the way that everybody else does. You know, most of the other races at least have, you know, they share a language in common with at least one or two others, you know, at least in their faction or what have you. No, the Ixar, like they go to a new place and they just can't understand anything. But like with any of those things, it just inspired degenerate play where I would be sitting in the, you know, in the Western or no, in the Eastern common lands, like in the tunnel, just like listening to somebody speak the dark elf language over and over again. Like they would just type the same garbage sentence to train up that skill.
To be fair, how is that different than foreign language classes?
Okay, point taken.
So similar ones that I'm actually surprised hasn't been replicated is just the fact that, you know, any race can, you know, completely switch their factions if they want to, if they put enough effort into it.
Yeah, you can.
And, oh, go on.
You can grind for a faction. Like you could just go to a city and fight their enemies until the, you know, people would con or consider kindly toward you.
Right. And that's similarly, you could, you know, I know this affected you more than me, but you could also screw up your faction. Example, if you're playing as a paladin, you were basically aligned opposite to the city guard for the city where your guild is.
Yeah.
So you would very quickly be relegated to having to sneak in through the sewers.
Yep. along with the like the necromancers and the thieves and such. Yeah.
No, thieves were fine.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. No.
Yeah. And it actually worked out well because thieves were the faction that you technically, if you wanted to, you could ally with the Thieves Guild and like build faction with both.
Oh, nice.
All right, so guys, without looking, I want you guys to guess what 25 expansions in, with the 25th expansion, what stat did they finally add to the game?
Charisma.
I got nothing.
They added the luck stat finally.
Oh, okay.
Which randomly increased the amount of gold in your split, the amount of critical damage you do, and your chance to succeed in a trade skill combine. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to give you an idea, this is coming from a game that years ago, more than what, 10 years ago now, had the alcohol tolerance skill.
Yep. Well, it was a thing, right? Like alcohol would give you stats, but it would also make you drunk. So like the more you drank, the more you got the stats without getting the, you know, the crazy warped vision and the wibbly walk.
That's right. Great. But it depends on what you're doing. If you're a warrior, great idea. If you're a wizard, less so.
Yeah. I am so fucking nostalgic for this game. And like, I've got the source books for the EverQuest tabletop game, like on my, like, you know, I just keep books that I can just look at, just, you know, reference. Sure. Almost like coffee table books or whatever. Like in my bedroom, like on my nightstand, if I just want something to look at while I'm falling asleep, I've got like the EverQuest Atlas that just has these really beautifully drawn, completely non-functional maps of the different zones as of the Planes of Power expansion, along with lore descriptions of what this area is and who lived there. Like, I was all in on this and kind of continue to be without having played it really for 10-15 years. Yeah.
Is it free to play now? It looks like it might be.
Yeah,
it is.
So it's free to play, but you pay for extras, like extra inventory space. You pay to get extra characters and stuff like that. But if you just wanted to like sign up, you could even do like they've got a 2002 version of the game. Like at least the last time I looked at this, which was 2012, you would be able to go onto a server that just had everything pinned to the Planes of Power era, I believe.
And that would notably be pre Plane of Knowledge, right?
No, Planes of Power had the Plane of Knowledge, so you have the warp, yeah. Which is a bummer because travel time is another one of those things that like they rightfully patched out because it's not for everybody, but the idea that just kind of like moving across the continent was both dangerous and kind of like not free from a time and investment kind of thing.
That's one of the things that really disappoints me, because even though it got rid of a lot of it, like original World of Warcraft had that in particular for anyone that plays a night elf.
Mm-hmm.
There was kind of the rite of passage of running across a ludicrously high level zone to get to where all the rest of the all the rest of your faction was. And that's the sort of thing that was just like every day in EverQuest.
I'm happy you brought this. I like thinking about EverQuest.
So I clicked on the play free thing, and without realizing it, that takes you to create an account for just Daybreak Studios, like the generic page for them. But I didn't realize it was generic because they got a bunch of EverQuest imagery on there. Mm-hmm. And I looked at them like, holy shit, Batman is in EverQuest? 25 expansions, I guess. But no, it's just Daybreak has worked on something Batman at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, if there's a free to play option and people are feeling nostalgic, I mean, guys, let me know. We can make a run on EverQuest at some point, just for the tourism.
Just for the tourism. Yeah. No, we did the WAF 1 year anniversary, which was 7 years ago. Fuck. coming up on 8 years ago. Fuck. and that was we did a little section on EverQuest there, just because it was like, I even forget what the reason was, but
yeah
went in and like I my character is still there on Furio Navai. The guild is still there, but nobody's on.
Wow.
Yeah, no.
this is good stuff.
Yeah. I think we need to move off of this because I could probably just talk about like 15-year-old EverQuest shit for hours. So
the podcast in there somewhere. It is not this podcast.
Probably not this one. So let's end this section, I guess.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Normally on the zeros and fives, we would do a free play, but we're recording this on April Fool's Day. So, Dennis, what is the question that you asked these jolly fools? And I mean fools like in a good, like, I guess, tarot way.
In a nice way, yeah. In a friendly way. For April Fools, rather than trying to pull anything over on you guys, other than not doing a free play, we asked about what you would contribute to the April Fools announcement madness that inevitably happens every year. So
yeah.
Lots of video game companies do some kind of April Fools announcement. This year, I think the best one I've seen today was Razer's Ping Everywhere app.
Okay.
You guys seen that?
No.
No.
Basically, talking to friends is a drag, and ping systems are so effective in games that they have an app you can download on your phone and just point and ping at things to replace talking to your friends. So you don't have to say, hey, donuts are here. You just put down the donuts and ping them.
Huh. Or
ping where you want to go to lunch, and maybe your friends will follow you there. You don't have to interact. But anyway, I wanted to hear what our listeners thought a good headline would be that is just plausible enough to whip the internet into a frenzy.
Good jokes. So I'm going to get us started here with Ollie, who says, I'd simply leak a really convincing Smash Brothers Ultimate character screen with Waluigi on it and a date.
Oh.
See, that's not fair. Like that, like the part of the problem is people want that and you're just getting their hopes up. Oh, also, I'm going to be critiquing all of your answers. I'll be, you know, so nothing Nintendo does will surprise me. But it is beyond reason to me that they have not just like said, okay, Waluigi's coming and he is $25.
Oh, geez.
Let's see, David, what does Roop say?
He says, as part of savings, Activision Blizzard is selling their original Sierra intellectual properties back to the game writers.
Fuck, man. Again, things people want.
How this is going to turn into a really painful multiplayer.
It just when we get down to mics, that will also be so.
Ugh.
Man. Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
He says Sekiro to add multiplayer and battle royale modes this spring.
I mean, Miyazaki has said he's kind of curious about making something in the battle royale genre.
Why not start here? See, just plausible enough.
I just figured Dark Souls was the battle royale genre. You just never realized it. Like no one ever tells your character.
You're always although the battle royale formula would be a little bit undercut by the idea that everybody just gets back up when they die.
Well, I just figure it's Dark Souls is basically battle royale plus quantum immortality.
Okay, yeah. So it's just battle royale that is taking place on a glacial scale.
Yes.
Yeah. Mike says major games publishers come together to announce mass unionization of its workforce. Yeah, good April Fool's joke.
Anything in America having a successful labor movement would be.
I wish I had some alcohol. What was you going to say, Dennis?
I keep on seeing headlines that this is about to happen.
Yes. Actually there are movements and there is definitely, especially even like websites as well. They're getting ready for it.
Isn't though, this seems like the industry that would be least able to unionize because its whole problem is, hey, it's incredibly easy to replace people.
Yeah,
like, and the whole problem, with the industry innately means you can break any union at any time.
Maybe, but least able also probably implies most necessary.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that statement is true of anything that's tried to unionize.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah, this is my lefty is showing, and that's not what this podcast is about. Let's see, David, what does Chase say?
Chase says, Legend of Zelda, Taming the Wild. Sequel to the still popular Breath of the Wild, Taming the Wild puts you back in the boots of the hero of Hyrule for his most challenging task yet, agriculture. Coming to iOS and Android, help Link till the land, raise cows, and defend his home from moblins in this groundbreaking idle game.
Get it? Groundbreaking?
Yeah, yeah. Very good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. I play the fuck out of this.
Yeah, this sounds awesome.
Good idea, Chase.
I feel like this is the April Foolsiness, though, is slightly undercut by the fact that my time playing Zelda is already 90% cutting grass.
So they've already...
and then the cooking elements, you could just add in wholesale, and man... That'd be perfect.
Oh, yeah. I told you, like, I have a friend who straight up, like, I don't know why she doesn't get, like, Skyrim, because basically she plays Zelda Breath of the Wild straight up like Skyrim. It is a you know, a foraging and cooking simulator. Combat is completely incidental.
Man, just like raising yourself an army of cuckoos. Yeah, this is great. I want this very badly. And I believe it too. I'd actually believe that they'd do it. So, huh? Good one. Let's see, Dennis. What does Greg say?
He says Diablo 4, Elder Scrolls 6, and System Shock 3 are being changed to be free-to-play mobile games, with progress being gauged by how much they suck from your wallet by greedy game companies.
I mean,
kind of already happened with Diablo 4, right?
I was going to say, yeah. System Shock could be weird.
Wait, I thought Diablo 4 hadn't been announced.
It hadn't been announced, but we talked about it a while back. Blizzard teamed up with what is widely considered to be a Chinese shovelware developer that does Chinese shovelware developer that makes free to play or pay to win kind of like grindy games and reskinned
Dross.
It.
Dross is the word.
Dross, yes. And basically just like, hey, can you reskin this with Diablo? Then they went up at BlizzCon and, you know, announced, we've got a new Diablo game for you. It's this. And they seemed to be surprised that people weren't so enthused about it. So kind of already happened with Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. Lindsay says, in honor of its 36th birthday, Super Mario Brothers is getting a remaster. That's right, folks. And with all new levels plus no pay to win features. Also, we added Yoshi. You're welcome.
Nothing makes me more suspicious of pay-to-win features than a part of the announcement being no pay-to-win features.
Oh, yeah. No, that first test too much. Lindsay adds here, there's an update. Update. We actually have confirmation that there will be a pay-to-win feature in this remaster.
I didn't see that. I swear to God, I did not read that before I said that.
Princess in another castle. No problem. Just $9.99 will solve that problem.
Oh, man. You know me so well. Set and Spike right there.
David, what does Zach say?
Zach says Oculus is making the Switch VR.
Wouldn't that just be an incredibly awkward Google cardboard?
Yeah.
It'd just be like you know, an awkward Google cardboard and then a bunch of ibuprofen for the inevitable neck pains.
Yeah, I gotta say though, the little like bird thing in the Switch Labo VR demo made me so happy.
Oh yeah. Oh shit, I forgot about the Labo VR. Man. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So my joke is an actual thing, and nobody corrected me. How can you do that? How dare you?
I mean, I just assumed you were, you know, pointing out the fact that, you know, life is ultimately a joke.
I mean, yeah, I am the comedian from Watchmen. And then, David, what does Spencer say? Or no, Dennis, what does Spencer say?
I want to read Spencer's answer. Yeah. He says there are currently no plans for another Skyrim remake.
They're out of systems for a while, aren't they?
The next generation will be announced soon.
Okay. Yeah. Man.
Is it on the Apple Watch yet?
No.
Are you sure you don't want to check before answering?
I'm pretty sure. It's on now I've got to mute that. I'm pretty sure. These are good. These are good. Mm-hmm. In lieu of coming up with my own, because I don't think I can be funny on the spot like that. I haven't been able to in the past. I want to share my favorite one that I saw this year. which is just I just before we started recording, I looked at a list of all of them, and it's a list on Destructoid, and it's just a single entry that could suffice as the headline: Kirby is now square. I'll put that in. I'll share the original tweet with you. It's in Japanese, which I do not read, but there is a URL, kirby.jp/square kirby.
That's fantastic.
So that's mine. You guys can either make up your own or share your favorite one that you've seen.
I've got one.
Okay.
I think it's actually something the world needs, which is the announcement of the Battle Pass Pass. As the Battle Pass format has become more and more popular for free-to-play games, it's starting to get frustrating for players who don't want to have to split their time or worry that by playing one game, they're falling behind on their Battle Pass for the other. So with the Battle Pass Pass, you buy it and instantly get 5 levels on every game that has a Battle Pass. And then a percentage of your experience from the game that you're playing's Battle Pass will also be applied to all the other Battle Passes that you own. Therefore, allowing you to keep up with all your favorite games.
Does anybody else smell toast? Like burnt toast?
But I feel like the core problem with this is that you only play one of these games, and even if they give you everything in the Battle Pass for free, it's still not worth it.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah. How about you, David?
So I'm going to take the core approach on this, and I enjoyed the Division 2 and Anthem swapped this year.
Okay.
On their Reddits.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you go to either of them, they have all of the styling and graphics and stuff from the opposite one. I don't play it, so I haven't been able to check out, but apparently Ubisoft also went pretty all in with their stuff for Rainbow Six Siege and releasing some sort of weird game mode where you're like, I don't know, I guess like fighting sparkly unicorns and stuff like that.
Yeah, I saw this one.
Yeah, I think my overall favorite one, though, although it's not gaming, is Stack Overflow, which is one of the main websites for programmers. Went back to a, you know, straight up 90s style, like, you know, excessive, you know, everything's animated and glittery and stuff like that.
That's fun.
Design.
See, I like those. Just if something is done by a publication, because the thing that I generally don't like, here's where I get cranky, is that the punchline for a lot of these jokes is actually it was a commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is all, that is all the cranky I will be.
Or I feel like similarly, the, I get frustrated with the, like you said, the things people actually want, and the joke is we're never going to give it to you.
Yeah.
See, that's why I liked the Razer ping system the best.
Yes.
Because that was, you know, that's, you know, a step to the side of what they do, and, and, kind of fits that mold or fits that bill of not taunting in having a funny joke.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for your creativity, everybody. If you want to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And thank you, Dennis, for putting this up.
Mm-hmm.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, it's been a while since you've been on, so I will defer to you here first.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk this week because I have stats to talk about.
Oh shit. All
yes,
right. So
I am go ahead.
Last time you talked about keeping track of your Apex Legends stats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You wanted to apply some big data to yourself. What are your findings?
Yeah, I big dated myself. I think the findings are
I believe the technical term is the quantitized self.
Yeah, the quantitized self, indeed. I found more interesting things in relation to my teammates than myself.
Okay.
But there are some interesting things for myself as well.
Do you know when your teammates are going to die in real life?
What's that?
Or do you know when your teammates are going to die in real life?
I have a projection. I wouldn't say I know.
It's an actuarial table. So yeah. Like I know to a pretty good kind of probabilistic certainty. However, you know.
Yeah. So my kill death ratio is right at 1. My placement on average out of 20 is just under 10, so 9.47 to be precise.
Okay.
So I am a thoroughly average player.
Okay.
But the more interesting thing is, as I've kept track of all the stats that it gives you on your teammates as well as you, I've gotten some insights on how all these characters are being used and how people who play these characters tend to perform. So the meme on either end of Apex Legends is where I will start, which is Wraith is the character that everyone has grown to hate as like the Twitch streamer mandatory character. And so if you are a douchebag who likes to go off on your own and try to be the hero, you are probably playing Wraith.
Weird. So Wraith is this game's Reaper?
Yeah. A little bit.
Huh.
So it's funny. If I played, that would be the player or the character I would play as, entirely based on danger sense or whatever the ability is, because that is the thing that pisses me off the most about Battle Royale games, is being sniped out of nowhere.
Yeah, so anyone not familiar, her passive ability, a voice in her head tells her when someone is aiming down the sights at her, when is targeting her.
Huh.
And so you can then communicate that to your teammates and scramble for cover. Yeah.
Unless you're playing Wraith, in which case you're not playing with your teammates.
Exactly. And David, you would not be allowed to play Wraith because you don't have TTV at the end of your name. I'm sorry. However, in the stats, so I main Lifeline, who's mostly a support character. She's got a bunch of healing and can get gear for her team. So know that all these stats are a little bit skewed, because anytime that Lifeline is available to pick, I pick her. But Wraith was chosen close to the most frequently. So Bloodhound, which is like a tracking character, was actually chosen the most at 20%. Wraith was just behind him or her at 19%. I should say them, because Bloodhound is actually a non-binary character, I believe. And then just below Wraith is Bangalore, which is like your kind of soldier person. She's the Soldier 76 of Apex Legends.
Okay.
At 18%. And everything else kind of jumps down from there across 9 characters. But that's relatively in line with my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Also in line with my expectations, roughly, is who is at the top of the average kills that a teammate gets. With Wraith coming in at the top, 1.35 kills per game. So yes, if you're playing with the Wraith, they are going to get more kills. That holds with the stereotype, right?
Okay.
It gets interesting from there, because the second most kills is Pathfinder, who is the affable, good-natured, apparently, murder robot in Apex Legends, who loves his zip lines and everyone is his friend, and he just seems to be very good at killing his friends. Go figure. Third place going to Octane, which is the character that was added most recently, about whenever the Battle Pass released, so a week and a half ago, something like that. And that's that. My guess on why he's up there, and this is pure storytelling, is that, you know, anyone who's more invested in the game, therefore probably better at the game, is investing the money to get him, or the currency, in-game currency, to get him. So maybe that skews towards more skilled players. At the bottom of the list, however, is poor, poor Caustic, who is a beefy boy.
Okay.
And throws around a lot of gas. Gassy, beefy boy. Does not do so well.
Please don't say gassy, beefy boy ever again.
But if not, how will we get a title?
Yeah. I refuse.
Close, right with him, just only very slightly higher. I should say, by the way, this is across 162 games, so 324 teammates.
Okay.
Is the data set for this. Just above him is Gibraltar, who is the other beefy boy of the Apex Legends universe. And he is widely panned for being an absolute unit in terms of hitbox. Mm-hmm. And just not being a very good character. And in fact, he is, let's see here. Yep. He is dead last in percentage picked. He's only picked 4% of the time. So poor, poor Gibraltar.
Huh.
Doesn't get any kills, never gets picked. Just kind of sad. That is until you look at average rank when I play. So where you place that, you know, first place to 20th place, when I play with these characters. And Gibraltar is all the way at the top. He is number one in average place.
Huh.
Which is incredible. Like, that, I never would have guessed that.
That has to be some kind of anomaly, though. Like, is his relative... So like, this isn't weighted by like, incidence. It's just literally, if somebody picks Gibraltar, they have a higher probability of rating higher? Of rating
highest? Have a higher probability of winning. You won't get as many kills, but you have a distinctly higher percentage chance of winning.
Specifically when the complaint against him is that he's so big that, you know, like he is the broadside of a barn.
He's just this big goober boy that nobody likes. Now, maybe the fact that he was picked a smaller percentage of the time is part of the reason why. So maybe it's skewed there, but I mean,
yeah,
data doesn't lie. Gibraltar, yeah, way up at the top, number one in average rank.
Yeah. Just, if I look at that kind of disparity, that feels like that either feels like an outlier, or it feels like there is some connection that I have not seen or identified.
I think when a Gibraltar is on the team, everyone else feels so bad for him that they think best to try to redeem it.
Yeah.
That was super interesting. Mirage was second in average place, followed by Bloodhound, who, if you remember, was the most picked. So at least that one is makes sense for him being picked frequently and getting consistently good placements. I was slightly vindicated to see Wraith all the way down in seventh in average place.
Okay.
So that everyone who's reflexively picking her, that puts you in your place. Ha ha ha.
Right.
But yeah, Gibraltar is the secret best character in the game in terms of who you should pick if you want to win.
Turns out.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah.
And that's my Apex Legends big data so far, at least as much as I've been able to parse it. Oh, yeah. Surprisingly. Oh, go ahead.
You laid out the sample size. You're fine disclosure-wise.
Yeah. So not surprisingly, if you want the character who survives the longest, gets the most revives, and gets the most respawns, is all the same, and it's Lifeline.
Okay.
And I qualify that by saying that does not include my data, and I pick Lifeline as often as I can. So it'd be interesting if I layered in my data on top of that, how that would change.
Right.
But she is – that's not surprising because she has the most survivability kind of abilities in her kit.
Right, right. And also, like, on your team, it makes sense for them to want to try to keep you alive because you keep them alive.
Yeah. This is interesting, though. One last thing. I've also been tracking whether or not my teammates have a mic.
Okay.
And most likely to be talkative is Caustic, who, if you remember, was the worst player.
Oh, hey, guys, I'm over here. Hey, everybody, look.
Yeah, so least kills in a game and most often having a mic. Go figure that out.
Hey, Chatty Cathy, keep your eyes on the prize.
And then the least likely to have a mic was Pathfinder, which reinforces his role as a murder bot.
Okay. You're playing this on the PS4?
PS4, that's
okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
So that's fun stuff. That's Apex Legends big data in a nutshell. I have a bunch of other ways I could slice it. It's just a matter of parsing it out, but it's been incredibly fun for me.
I mean, part of this is like you've played 136 rounds of this game or whatever the number you gave was. Yeah.
162.
162,
please.
Yes. I didn't mean to steal 30 some odd plays from
you. But
you
know, at an average, what's my average survival time? An average round for me, that's higher than I thought, lasts 12 minutes.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So, that's a good investment. Nice. I've enjoyed the game. I've definitely, again, looking at my statistics, I've kind of peaked, I've plateaued a little bit. So I got to either fight through this slump or it's time to go find something else to play. Maybe EverQuest. Yeah. but that's really all I've got. The one other thing I'll talk about is I got Slime Rancher as the free game from the Epic Games Store.
Oh, Slime Rancher is so good.
Well, I'm playing it with Luke and Milo, and they freaking love it.
Oh, that is great. Oh, man.
Cole, I think you've already talked it, not to death, but you've kind of laid out everything I would want to lay out about it.
Right.
It's just that, you know, a 4 and a 2-year-old get it and love it. So that's
so good. Do they feel bad about keeping the slimes in the pens?
No, that hasn't come up yet. They did feel very bad when I said about kind of cleaning up the area, and I kind of had slimes running everywhere because I did a bad job with my pens. I just turned and fired them off into the water.
Oh.
They were not happy with that.
They sound like they're having fun when they fly through the air, and you can't actually see them hit the water when they fall off the edge of the map. So
that's what I told them. Oh, they're fine. They're going swimming. and the riotous laughter when they made the connection that we were picking up slime poop to sell. it felt like hours. So
that is so good. How did they like the cat slimes?
How do they like the cat's lives?
The cat's lives. Yeah, have you found the cat slimes yet?
No, we have the tabby slimes.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so they like them, but they're very distressed that they eat chickens.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
have you explained how cats work to them?
I was just saying, you guys have seen them bring up a dead mouse in real life. I don't know how this is hard for you. Yeah, that is, and firing slimes off into the ocean are two low points for them. But everything else has been perfectly enjoyable.
I've watched a little bit of Let's Play of this game. However, I haven't actually played it. Are these chicken slimes or just chickens?
Just chickens. Yep. Oddly enough.
Yeah.
Oh, and sorry, they're not chickens. They're hen hens.
Yes.
Oh, well, you know.
Well, so there
is some very big questions about reproduction.
There are hen hens and then roosteros. You don't want to feed too many of your roosteros.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Because one roostero will impregnate many hen hens. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a ratio you can keep. And then I don't know. I'm not far enough to know if the rock hen hens are different or in a meaningful way. I imagine at some point maybe I'll find slimes that will only eat one or the other. But
yeah.
Dwayne the Rock Hen Hen.
I had a final thought. The one actual game thing that I'll talk about, other than it being delightful for little kids, is it took me forever to notice that there is virtually no animation on the slimes or the hen hens. Like, for all intents and purposes, it is a solid model that doesn't change. Like, the hens literally don't have a walking animation. They just kind of bop around same way that slimes
A squish and deform. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like, how efficient is that? And also, it detracts absolutely nothing from the game.
Yeah.
So, man, anyone who's feeling like, is feeling like, I'm not like an animation master, I can't make a game. Dude, they're doing it just fine.
Yeah, excellent design like makes it so you don't have to work as hard on the other side of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was literally hours and hours and hours in before I was like, oh, I guess that doesn't actually move.
That's fantastic. I played it and I was like, oh yeah, this is a fucking adorable game. I never would have thought to play it with a little kid, but that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it was very serendipitous that I found it.
Nice.
So yeah, that is me.
Cool. I've got one. So I have been playing and greatly enjoying an early access game on the Epic Game Store called Satisfactory. So I talked about this back in E3 last year. It was announced during the PC game show. They showed it off and it looked extremely my jam, and my impression of it right now is that it is extremely my jam. So think of it like 3D Factorio. Have either of you played or seen Factorio? Is that a salient comparison?
Is that a Zachtronics game?
No, you could be forgiven for thinking that it is, though, because it does deal primarily with automation and inputs and outputs.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember looking at it in Let's Plays when I believe it was you and Ben talking about it.
Yes, Ben has played this and he's enjoyed it, and he's played Factorio. This is similar to that, so I'll just explain Satisfactory on my own. You are a pioneer who has been sent by the Fixit Corporation to an alien land with nothing but a couple of prefab parts, and what you're trying to do is mine and harvest everything you can and build a factory so that you can send materials back up either in probes or on a space elevator that you build in order to unlock more blueprints to build more and better things. The idea being that you go from doing everything by hand to automating as much as you can. So, you know, you start out with like a chisel and you go and you harvest enough iron to build an automatic miner that you place down, and you go and grab the iron out of it every time it fills up, to using that extra iron to make the parts to build a mining facility and powering it, you know, by gathering leaves and, you know, making the fuel that you need to power it, and then building conveyor belts. Lots and lots of conveyor belts, so many conveyor belts to take that ore and smelt it and then store the ore, because you need to have a buffer so that the lines don't back up in the halt production. And then you take the ingots and you craft those into various components to make more complex machines, in order to make more complex machines to the point where you decide, oh, biofuel isn't enough. I need to make an outpost to go mine coal, and then build automated trains and trucks in order to move great deals of resources back and forth and set up those routes, until effectively what you have created is a gigantic 5 kilometer by 5 kilometer factory on this alien world. And it is 100% my jam. I played it for 8 hours yesterday.
Whoa.
I just like fell face first into it.
At a certain point, you don't need to even move anymore, it sounds like. So is this like the Nirvana in this game? You just get to sit and watch your factory play out?
I mean,
it becomes a clicker game.
I mean, kinda, yeah. But it's like, you know, like I set it out and I automated a good number of the stuff. I'm like, oh, but there's a bottleneck here, so I could just kind of let this go, but I can actually, because this is 3D, I could build it upwards. And that's a huge deal. You know, it's a huge deal in the game, because it is, you know, first person, because it is 3D, you can stack your stuff on top of each other, and you have to kind of figure out how to build a network of conveyor belts and kind of these switchbacks to move stuff efficiently. And then also range out and explore so you can find more deposits. So like, yeah, the idea is to automate, but like with any of these, like even with Slime Rancher, like you can automate Slime Rancher quite a bit. There is still tending and there is still optimization and tweaking that you are doing. And that is the part of this that really, really appeals to me. You know, yes, there is the that amazing moment that I liken to in The Simpsons, when Mr. Burns loses all of his money. He picks up a can and, you know, like, at least it gets him to recycle. He picks up a can, takes it to the recycling, gets a nickel, uses that nickel to buy a nail, ties that nail to a stick, and then picks up 3 cans with the nail on the stick. Like, and then eventually he turns, you know, he creates a gigantic factory that uses 6-pack rings to pull whales out of the ocean. but that's kind of what this is. When any
the
of these games
Dishonored
are
Dishonored got weird.
So it's not as like complex as Factorio is. You know, Factorio has been in development longer. This game is in early access. You know, so I was discouraged because it wasn't listed on Steam. Now it's on Epic. I think that there's a lot of room for it to grow. And I think that that third dimension kind of replaces a little bit of that complexity with space management. You know, you do have these efficiencies to establish with trying to fit as much. It's almost like circuit design in a weird way. Like when you run out of horizontal space, you end up like stacking stuff on top of each other. Yeah, it's really cool, and I'm excited. I normally don't go in for early release games, but I've been looking forward to this one for so long that when I got the email that it was available, I was like, yeah, this is probably going to be worth the throw, and that is borne out.
So are there any kind of baddies or creepers, for lack of a better term, that can like come in and mess up your factory?
Nothing that I've seen. That actually will harm what you've made. However, there are aliens. Some of them are, you know, peaceful. Other ones will kind of charge you and do damage. You do have health, like there is fall damage. You have to you have to manage that. And it's a little bit like it's got a bit of a Subnautica kind of angle to it, where when you kill an alien, you pick up little bits of it, and then you take it back, and you can actually like scan it, and then send back samples back to HQ, and they will like take that xenobiology readout and send you more blueprints and stuff. So there really is like an encouragement to go out and explore, and there is danger when you're out there. Like you can die, and then it leaves your corpse, and you have to go out and get it. I don't know if you lose it forever if you die twice. It's only happened to me once. But yeah, there's no creeper that will actually like set you back. There's nothing that nothing like Infactorio. Nothing even as hostile as the aliens that you find in Factorio, who will like come at you when you're in your when you're in your area. Like nothing has attacked me unless I've encroached on its land.
Nice. Okay. So do you think it's losing anything because of that, or is it like, nope, a game that's purely just about optimization with no friction to that? I won't say no friction to that, but like no antagonization to that is perfectly fine.
I think it's perfectly fine. I liken it a little bit to, weirdly, to Stardew Valley. It's not weirdly, they're similar in lots of ways, but like Stardew Valley has combat, and that is a pretty engaging part of that game, but you go to a special area to do it.
Cool. Okay. Yeah.
And as much fun as I'm having talking with you guys, I kind of wish I was playing it now. No, it's really good. I would recommend. I understand that people are reticent to throw in on an early access game, but it's stable so far. It's never really crashed. There's some like not optimal graphical things, like when certain things kind of collide, like there's clipping and things like that. Ends up looking a little bit awkward, but I'm enjoying it.
I'm just going to say, if you can optimize it well enough, you probably could play it while podcasting.
Maybe, yeah. I could just watch it. It could be like a clicker. Yeah. Cool. But yeah, that is Satisfactory. Any questions that you guys have for me about that?
I already got mine.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. I love it. Oh, it's also
it sounds like it's Satisfactory.
Yep. I knew it was going to happen. I was worried. I tweeted yesterday that like, oh, Satisfactory is a really neat game. And I was worried that somebody would come back with that. Like, you know, so somehow on a tweet that is annoying in a way that it is not annoying when one of you guys says it to me. Yeah. Oh, man. And that's really it. That's all I've got. I mean, that's not really it. We finished up, Jal and I finished up Resident Evil 6 over the weekend. However, I don't think that there's much more we can say about it.
Resident Evil 6? No, that is an infinite well of podcasting goodness.
You would think given how much a lot of us have talked about it. I feel like I got out what I wanted. The Ada campaign is worse than I remember.
That's a bit, that was going to be my one question. Is it as bad as I remember?
Yeah. The Ada campaign is, dog narts. It's not very good at all. And even the end of Jake and Sherry's campaign, there's some real rough moments in there from a play and instant death perspective that is real regrettable, because those characters are good. And yeah, I wish that their play ended up working out better.
See, I just remember that you get to fist fight one of the bosses, and for me that justified pretty much the whole experience.
Yeah. Ustinak is good, the big nemesis guy who comes at you.
Yeah. Ironically enough, like I would say he was kind of the low points of all the other campaigns he ends up in, just because I feel like there's not much justification of him being just straight up immortal.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's good. It's good in Jake and Sherry, because that's what their campaign's about in a lot of ways. You know, that is the central the central gameplay thing.
Yep.
Yeah. David, how about you?
So I have been solely binging the Division 2.
Okay.
I'm definitely in it deep. It has its claws in. I'm not sure exactly what all to say about it, other than it continues to have pretty much no plot.
Okay.
Which is interesting. Which, I mean, in a weird way, I suppose this technically probably makes it more realistic.
In that there is no story actually to a gigantic disaster and the horrible aftermath.
I mean, all the things you're doing are basically just, all right, you solve this, but some faction of horrible people have now taken over this, or we've got food, but now we need electricity so that we don't have to turn off the lights as soon as it gets dark.
Hmm.
Or wait, you would think that'd be the other way around.
Gonna say, there's your problem.
But anyway, so I will. I know how much can I talk about spoilery stuff in a game that, like,
I mean, you just said it has no story.
Yeah.
Right. So I did save the president. So that was kind of interesting.
Cool. The president of what?
Of the United States.
Huh.
I mean, it does, it takes place in Washington, D.C., and kind of the plot line is Air Force One gets, shot down sometime before the events of the game. And, it's assumed everyone's dead. And then you eventually get a mission to go in and, one of the factions has something that you think that they're, hiding, that you think is like a super weapon. And it turns out it's actually just like they've captured the president and are holding him hostage.
Okay.
So it's also kind of interesting because, the president is very much like, old white dude, and is very much in the I'm predominantly worried about or at least before the disaster, like, I'm predominantly worried about the economy type of president.
Okay.
But then when you actually get to the place, the first thing you see is him, like, when you distract, when one of the guards is distracted by you suddenly bursting in, him, like, disarming him, taking his gun, and start, like, shooting people alongside you, is kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, so this takes place in the Saints Row universe.
As you do. And then you're then informed that apparently someone had, before the outbreak, someone had developed a drug that could cure all viruses, and they had just apparently decided only to use it in an emergency. And so now, like, that's honestly probably the point where, like, 44% into the game, like, that's technically speaking probably the plot.
Okay. If they haven't used it yet, what qualifies as an emergency?
Well, I mean, the problem is, again, apparently he was carrying it in a briefcase, like, nuke code style, when it got shot down.
Okay.
But it does raise the question of, like, one, like, why didn't you use this to literally revolutionize human healthcare?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Shh, just keep shooting people.
Yeah, exactly. I also feel like, it's interesting. Kind of one of the things I'm sort of, I quote unquote kind of watching, just to see is to what degree, I feel like it plays out the sort of sub-story of the fact that this is a game that's quote unquote not political. And overall, I feel like they get a lot of mileage in terms of not being political by, not having a plot. But the True Sons faction that I think I mentioned last time, they're straight up like, basically angry law enforcement officers and like rogue military and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely some things that are.
I can't believe that a thing with Tom Clancy's name on it, even posthumously, is apolitical.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, yeah, yeah. So I guess what I'd say is, like, there's definitely things where if you look at, for example, some of the boss profiles, it's very much like I earlier today took down one of their guys that, like, claimed to be a descendant of Thomas Jefferson and decided to, like, start up a plantation and like is kidnapping people to force them to work on. It's like, that's a little bit political.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. So it's very much like they are definitely sort of the bad side, the bad kind of alt-right side of the survivalist, movement.
Yeah.
They're also just kind of laughably, or I don't know if laughably, they strike me as being very strangely evil.
I mean, yeah.
Well, by which I mean, though, there's a difference between, like, and I realize to a certain degree, this is kind of the entire point of, like, hey, the alt-right makes no sense.
Okay.
But, like, being like, I'm super into America, and I'm going to protect it. But the first thing we need to do is get rid of all these freedoms.
Yeah.
Like, I guess as I said, it's like, no, that really is why the alt-right makes no sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. Other than that, though, it's other than the plot just being weird, it's a lot of fun. I just had a mission that was set in basically the NASA headquarters.
Hmm.
And for some reason, I don't know why, some developer decided this was like something that he needed to develop assets specifically to.
Mm-hmm.
But throughout the level, there's several copying machines that you can like go up and make them print out like the last document they received, and they're all these like memes just making fun of flat earth theory.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like this is one of those things where the more I talk about this game, the more nonsense it sounds, but like it really is a great game.
Yeah. So I mean, have there been any missions that like break the mechanical mold a little bit? Like, like has there been anything that is like real standout for you in terms of what it's asking you to do?
I think a lot of it, probably its biggest thing that it gets would be the actual settings. So there's a whole series of missions that are basically you retaking the various Smithsonian museums.
Okay.
And so those are really neat because, there's, all the set pieces with, like, the Air and Space Museum where,
you throw a grenade into the spirit of St. Louis.
I mean, that is one of the things that's kind of, I would say, like, to the degree this game sometimes has feels, that is one of them, in that there are a number of situations where it's like, oh yeah, so for example, in the Air and Space Museum, basically this like alt-right faction is just stripping down America's history to make weapons, and it's like, oh, that's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
But one of the ones that's actually really neat is, I forget what it's at. I think it's like the Viewpoint Museum, which is like a museum of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the set pieces are basically like recreations of like newsroom sound stages and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, the real, you know, exaggerated like lighting and you know, kind of facades that you can hide behind and things like that. So it's really neat experience. There's similarly, you have a shootout in the Air and Space level in the planetarium. So it's, you trying to like aim while, you know, trippy like lighting effects are going off all over the place. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, it definitely has its moments.
I forget if I asked you this question the last time you talked about this. What kind of character are you playing?
So right now, you start out basically just playing a generic character, and you don't actually get a specific class until you reach the level cap.
Okay.
Right now, I tend to go with either a shotgun and a long-range rifle, some sort of like pseudo-sniper rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Although I tend to, when I do that, I tend to set it up more like a hunting rifle. Kind of a more conventional setup. However, lately I've been experimenting with a lot the light machine guns, which kind of their special thing is, one, they behave a lot like assault rifles, but they have a maximum range more similar to a sniper rifle. And also they dramatically quicker will basically suppress enemies. So, if you fire on an enemy for a couple for about a second, it'll force them to stay behind cover for a few seconds.
Hmm.
So, and that's turned out to be really, really important when playing solo.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm. Think you're going to see it through to the level cap?
Yeah, I think so. I'm at level 18 out of 30 now.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a big assumption that the level cap does not get expanded before you reach it.
Yeah.
Yeah, although it seems like the way they're more doing is kind of like an alternate advancement type thing, where my understanding is once you get to the level cap, like I said, that's when you actually unlock the classes, and then you're basically leveling up the class abilities.
Okay. That's right.
Yeah, although I do know also, for example, that there's one of the game has four factions, and one of them doesn't even show up until after you've completed the main game. So there's definitely a lot of content available. We'll see how long it, kind of holds my interest.
Yeah.
So, one other thing actually I wanted to call out that I think is kind of neat is game has crazy, crazy comprehensive both configuration options in general and also accessibility options.
Cool.
The whole, various color blind modes and closed captioning and stuff. And something I've never seen before is, if you want, it will actually voiceover read all of the in-game menus for you.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So, you know, definitely something where, you know, they definitely put some effort into those features, which is pretty cool.
Nice. Yep. Always like seeing that happen.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know that I have any other questions about it. I'm happy you're having a good time with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Love.
Yeah. How do you feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
There we go.
Whoa, buttons from David.
The credit. He's been giving us buttons these past few times.
You know, if you can't beat them, button them.
Yep. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this level number 280. That is a lot of levels. I am led to believe. So, what's up, Greta? Sorry, she's just kind of meowing at me from the window. So I need to go take care of my cat. So you know the things you can do. You can go to patreon.com/thelevelpodcast. You can tell your friends about the show. Ratings or reviews are good. And just generally keep on listening. We're really happy to have you. Am I forgetting mm-hmm. anything?
No, I will have to check back in when I'm at a significantly higher percentage of Apex Legends games with more data yes. updates here.
Yes, I need to.
Yeah, wait. What's your p-value? Yeah,
I need to see when you regress to the mean. Please don't play enough for it to regress to the mean. You've got a family.
I'm so close to the mean already on kill death ratio and placements. I'm pretty much there.
Oh, so I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can watch my statistically proven mediocre Apex Legends play on GreenLaser73 at Twitch.
I am currently David Moneysmith in New York City. Presumably, I'll continue to be David Moneysmith. I may or may not continue to be in New York City. Who knows?
Who knows?
Ooh, come back to Cincinnati. We'll hang out.
Yeah. how do I end this? How do I end this show? So until next time, stick around for some titles. So who has titles?
I have, where's my phone? Two. I have three.
Okay.
I have Betray Confirm. I have Wholesome Things Rule.
Okay.
And then I had, this is not a direct quote, but it's Raising an Army of Cuckoos. Or how do you say cuckoos? Cuckoo?
I don't know how
it's from,
to.
From
yeah, I know.
The
yeah,
Legends
from,
of Zelda.
From one. Zelda, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. David, you got any?
So, as I threatened, I only have, Beefy Gassy Boy?
I refuse, but you can still submit it.
Yeah.
And then I have, I big dated myself. how do you guys feel about I big dated myself?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
Cool. Done. Cool. All right. I'm going to go play some Satisfactory.
Cool.
All right.
See ya.
Acceptable.
Later, guys. Take care. Have a good week, guys.
You
bye.
Too.
Bye.